This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with a pretty incredible 96-year-old, Alan Dunbar, who served with the 106th Infantry Division during World War II. He was one of 6,000 men, two full regiments from that division, who were surrendered together after being surrounded during the early days of the Battle of the Bulge. He was taken first to Oflag 64, an all-officer camp in Poland, but he'd be moved to two different POW camps, Oflag 13B and Stalag 7A, before he'd taste freedom again. Let's pick it up while still at that first camp in snowy Zubin, Poland.
There were a lot of rumors going around.
About the Russians?
About the Russians.
And you didn't want to get captured by them, did you?
No.
Or liberated by
no.
them? Because that would be being captured by them.
Yeah. So we were very happy when they kept going to the west.
Mm-hmm.
We went to the prisoner of war camp called Habelberg. Was in Germany.
They moved you to get you away from the advancing Russians?
Right.
Okay.
And advancing Russians and the German army, too, that was in Europe. So Colonel Waters was the type of individual that you could trust with anything you might have to say.
Right.
I learned that very early in being with him. He was very honest with me, and he said something to me that I started to laugh because I thought it was funny. He says, oh, by the way, since I'm a graduate of West Point, he says, I'll probably end up as a general. And I said to him, I said, you and I have an agreement. We only talk to each other by our first names. And if you become a general, you mean to tell me you're not going to expect me to say, call you a general? He says, yeah, you and I are friends. You're Alan. I'm John.
So he got wounded in the transition between camps?
Yeah. Here's what happened.
Yep.
We were at Hamelberg. We were ready to be sent to this camp in Mootsburg.
Right.
Which was north of where we were. So Patton sent a task force to Hamelberg to liberate the camp and liberate his son-in-law.
Right.
The task force got beat up.
It was a failed attempt.
Failed attempt. And Waters decides to go out and greet the men who was sent by Patton to liberate the camp. But they didn't liberate the camp. They all got captured.
So they get captured trying to liberate them, and he goes out to meet the new prisoners that are coming in, that were the guys that were supposed to liberate it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And guess what? Somebody shot him in the back. A German guard shot
Waters
in the back.
Mm-hmm.
He was critically wounded. So when I saw him after he had been wounded, I said to him, I said, you have a wound. It's either going to kill you or it's going to really, you'll really be disabled. I said, John, I said, this is the worst wound you can have. You're shot in the back. That bullet is lodged up against your spine.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the hole in the bag. I mean, I don't know how he was talking to me. So he said, Alan, he said, I guess this is going to be a parting of the ways. I said, John, I said, I'm praying to God that you survive. So he said, I'll see you in heaven.
And I know you're both still looking forward to that meeting, but he would make it home safely. You've been in touch with his family over the years, and you've been very clear how much John Waters meant to you. This is the man, when they were marching you to Hamelberg and your feet were so swollen you couldn't even walk, he convinced the Germans to take you in the meat wagon that they used for all the wounded. The same guy who would come get you from that wagon and carry you to the barn so you could sleep at night. And it sounds like he just had the kind of monumental impact on your life that you seem eternally grateful for.
I didn't think that I would have lived. He, being the son-in-law of this man, carried weight with the Germans. He was like a god to the Germans.
Patton was. Yeah.
That he couldn't be killed. That he was from the way back in history.
Well, that's what he believed. Patton believed he was Napoleon and Julius
right.
Caesar reincarnated.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Germans believed that.
We're almost out of time, but I need to hear the story of your liberation and what that felt like for you.
Oh, well, we finally get into Mooseburg.
Right.
Patton sent another task force to liberate Mooseburg, and he did.
So you saw the tanks come through the gate.
I saw the tanks come through the tank gate, and I saw the troops coming in, and I saw the Germans throwing their arms down, and I said, we're free. And then this guy comes into the camp.
General Patton comes right into the camp in Mooseburg.
He comes into Mooseburg. He's riding a Jeep that's painted gold. And he's in there, and he's got his feet like this. He's got jumpers on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those pants that they...
He was famous for them,
oh,
yeah.
And two silver revolvers, silver helmet with three stars up there. And he's got this banner on, and he tells the men, he calls them all. He says, I hope you can hear me. 1,500 Allied soldiers, American soldiers, you are going home. I am liberating you. You're going aboard 100 planes. We'll be here to pick you up. And some character goes out there, screw that. I want to get on a plane now. And everybody, all the POWs, they started to laugh. 47, the C-47s. Half the POWs, they were dressed like bums.
Well, sure.
I mean, we looked like bums. I mean, I hadn't shaved in who knows when. I had a beard and everything. I was afraid to go on the plane. Got to France.
Right.
They flew us to France. They examined us.
Yeah.
To see whether we were fit to go home.
Right.
Or fit to go aboard the ship. There was a ship waiting in the harbor.
What was the American port that you came into?
First, we landed in New York Harbor.
Did you sail past something that had some significance there?
Statue of Liberty.
So they took you right past Lady Liberty.
They put Liberty, and then we docked in New Brunswick.
Mm-hmm.
And they put us on buses and took us home.
What did that mean to you? You told me that the hardest thing about being a prisoner was just living in the absence of freedom. And then you sail past the symbol of freedom and liberty. What did that mean to you to see that again?
Well, it meant that a lot of people died for us to get home. And I thought about them. And I thought about my family. What are they going to feel about me being a POW?
And are they even going to recognize you?
Yeah, I only weighed 102 pounds.
So you got to go home and see your mother and
yes,
your father?
I got home to see my mother and father. And my mother was beside herself. And she said, I knew she was going to say it. She said, the only thing missing is your brother Joe. And he died a hero's death. And when I read the letter Frank Knox sent to my mother and father on Joe's death, I started to cry.
Mm-hmm.
I said, here's a man who was Secretary of the Navy. Frank Knox sent a letter to my mother telling her of Joe's death and what he meant to the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to myself, Joe had to die for a reason. And, you know, I couldn't find a reason. I didn't know why they took Joe and didn't take me after what I've been through. And my brother, who was in the Far Eastern fighting a war, why he wasn't taken. It was very difficult for me to comprehend. I had a lot of questions to ask the military, but I never got around to it.
Do you have any answers now?
Some, but they're not satisfying to me.
Can't bring them back.
The only thing I can remember was coming into New York Harbor and seeing the Statue of Liberty. I cried.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. But the hardest thing was trying to regain my sense of humor and my thoughts about the men were killed.
Over 400,000 of them.
And I had memories and nightmares before I finally got rid of it, of the men that I personally trained. And you know what I did?
Huh.
I wrote to the parents.
When you found out someone had died, you wrote to the parents and told them what you thought of them?
I told them that they were good soldiers, that they thought of them always, and that they were the best that United States Army had.
Mm-hmm. Have you been to the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
No, and it's something that I want to do before I die. There are a lot of things I want to do before I die. I personally want to visit of the addresses I have, and it's going to be tough for me to find some of them.
To surviving family members?
Yes, to surviving family members. There's one man I'm looking for, Kinoy. I can't find him.
Yeah. How do you spell it?
K-I-N-O-Y.
Okay. I'll do some research. Do you remember his first name?
Ernest.
Ernest Kinoy. Okay.
Ernest Kinoy.
I'll look for it.
I want to tell you. I want to thank you for coming because it reminded me of my responsibility as a platoon leader, talking to you. I felt that I was a damn good officer to my men, and I hated to lose one of them.
And I want to thank you for serving our country, for telling us a story that no one else could. I guess the last thing I'd be interested in knowing from you, after everything that you went through, living without freedom, I'm sure you appreciate it more because of that, losing a brother in the war and knowing that 400,000 other Americans died, what should we remember about that price and what it bought for our country?
I am proud of the men that I trained. I was proud of the men who didn't make it home. I was proud to be an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was proud I was born in America. And I am only maybe one of a very few that had this experience. And I want the United States to know that there are many more men who should be honored for what they did.
Amen.
And don't ever forget our relationship to those who didn't come home, and remember our freedom. It's hard bought.
That is the perfect way to wrap things up. And it means a little more when you hear from someone who lived without freedom as a prisoner of war and lost a brother who made the ultimate sacrifice during World War II. Alan Dunbar, nearly 97 years old, an amazing story we had the privilege of hearing today. And one final note, you heard Mr. Dunbar say he really wanted to track down Ernest Kinoy, that talented radio operator he had helped over the wall to make sure he could keep him in his outfit. I did a little research, as I promised Mr. Dunbar I would. Turns out Mr. Kinoy also became a prisoner of war. When the Germans learned that he was Jewish, he was moved from a prisoner of war camp to a slave labor camp. But he survived, and Kinoy went on to a prolific career as an Emmy Award-winning screenplay writer. He wrote Broadway musicals, too, even worked some of his war experiences into some of the things that he wrote. And I have some more information on Mr. Kinoy linked at hometownheroesradio.com. I've also passed all of this on to Mr. Dunbar, but here's the unfortunate part. Mr. Kinoy died in November 2014, just 3 months before Mr. Dunbar and I sat down for this interview. I'm sorry we couldn't make that connection sooner, but Mr. Dunbar is reaching out to Kinoy's family so he can share his memories and his warm sentiments about the hero that they just recently lost. A lot of twists and turns in this episode of Hometown Heroes. Thanks for sticking around for the ride. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time, and reminding you, as Alan Dunbar did so powerfully, that freedom is not free.